Hi and hello, Watch fans, and welcome to another Audical Analysis show with David, Alon, and me sitting around the virtual table to discuss one of David Moshe's recent provocations, his article entitled Too Thick or Not Too Thick. And there's a slight Shakespearean bent to that title, right, David?
There is. There's also another way you can look at it, and I guess we'll get into that shortly.
Okay. This is actually a really interesting topic, especially for the three of us, because we all have slightly different opinions, I would say, but they all feed into one another quite organically. I'm going to let David give us a recap of what his thoughts were as he laid them down in the article. And then I think I might jump in first, and then I will let Alon come back against what I have to say, either in agreement or otherwise. David, take it away.
All right, Rob. Thank you very much, as always, for having me. I'm really looking forward to this. So I guess let's address the title first. So it was supposed to be Shakespeare, and I thought I was very clever for coming up with this. And then in the group chat, it quickly devolved into something else, a lot less refined, I guess we'll say.
Yeah. You were speaking about my weight. Huh? You were calling me to take, buddy?
Sure.
Is that even a discussion?
and so as I was thinking about what I was going to say, kind of the points I wanted to hit during this podcast, it became really clear that some things were just going to come out weird. And so I think the best thing to do is, as I say them, I'll just diffuse them. So I'll put that to the side for now. I will also say that even though we don't really do risk checks on this show, I always try and be relevant. So at least, you know, I can wear something that sort of inspires me while I'm speaking. And right now I've got on the Omega Chronograph GMT 150 meter. It's an Aquaterra. It's quite a mouthful, but the reason I'm saying it is because I double checked the measurements on Omega's website prior to this, and it's 20 millimeters, which to a lot of people is going to be a non-starter. But to me, it's fine. I have no issues with it. And it wasn't this particular watch that inspired the article, or the article, I guess, in this case. But what I really wanted to get at, you know, over the years I've been in this, it seems like over the last 3, 4, maybe 5, there's been this growing chorus of people saying this watch it's just too thick, just completely offhand saying it's too thick. And this follows a period of when the watch diameters were too large, because as I referenced in the article, early 2000s, large watches were in, the demand started coming in for smaller watches diameter wise. And it seems like now the discussion's shifting towards thick watches, and you hear it come up in terms of Tudor, especially. But Omega also is a brand which is referred to a lot in terms of thick watches. And the only thing I wanted to kind of say to people in this article was that it is absolutely fine to have an opinion on something. A watch can absolutely be too thick for you. But at the same time, if you're saying that just based off of seeing a measurement from a press release, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. I think the watch hobby is more fun when you open yourself up to new experiences and consider there might be other things to them, just one measurement.
Perfect timing with the dogs yapping in the background for me to step into this one. There are two key points that I took away from your incredibly interesting article. I enjoyed reading it and I enjoyed listening back to it again, not just because of my own sexy tones, but because of the words that they were reading on that occasion. And I found that you made a point about people dismissing watches based on their diameter as they see them on paper before they'd had a chance to try them on. And you said that was, you know, abhorrent, a zombie opinion, blah, blah, blah. People shouldn't subscribe to that. They should always make an effort to get the watch on their wrist before they make a decision. That's the point I'm going to focus on. But the other point you made that I think Alon will pick up after I've said my piece is that you make a point that a watch can basically be as thick as it needs to be for whatever purpose it's intended. So as long as its thickness suits its purpose, that's justifiable. Going back to the point about people making this assumption based purely on black and white figures, it keyed into a long-winded and very in-depth article I wrote on July 20th, 2020, which you can find on Fratello, still there, thank goodness, and it's called Rethinking Diameter Measurements with the Visual Impact Index. Now, I'd noticed this phenomenon that David has spoken at length about, and I wanted to try and create a formula, especially during the lockdown as it was then, that people could use to figure out whether a watch from its measurements alone looked true to size or oversized or undersized. Now, the very key point about the visual impact index is that it was not supposed to be a wearability index. It did not compensate for lugs, for case colors, for example, for the position of spring bars in the lugs, so how the strap drops down. It didn't compensate for the strap drop off or the balance of the watch versus a buckle, which would have required a weight measurement as well. So it wasn't a wearability index. It was simply an academic exercise that aimed to express the weird phenomenon Alon and I had noticed for years prior to that, that made a Nomos 38mm Orion, a model that we worked on a special edition together for in 2017, and something like the Orient Star Diver that I used as a counterpoint, which measures 43.6 millimeters but looks about 41 millimeters. Was there some way to reconcile this disparity? Some way to give people an actual equation that they could work with? And as it turned out, I came up with a multi-step process which enabled people to at least get an idea of whether the watch was true to size, oversized, or undersized from a visual perspective only. And what it required you to do, and there were several steps. There's 9 official steps, and then step 8 has got many sub-steps. So number 1, divide your case diameter by 2 to find the radius. Number 2, divide the radius by 1.6, which is the golden ratio rounded up to 1 decimal point, to find the ideal thickness. Subtract the actual thickness from the ideal thickness. That's your running total. Step 4, divide the radius by 100 and multiply it by 16. This gives you the optimal bezel width. Number 5, measure your bezel width, subtract it from the optimum. Number 6, divide it by 2. Number 7, add this to your running total. And number 8, dial elements subtracted to find the working total. You take 0.1 off for a single date window, a day window, a month window, a linear power reserve, more than 2 lines of text in the contrasting color. Hello, Rolex Submariner Red, we're looking at you. And then for something like a subdial, a point of date, a big date, a tourbillon, or an open heart balance, you take off 0.2. And then step 9, add or subtract the working total from the actual diameter of the watch to establish the visual impact rounded to the nearest decimal point. Bit of a mouthful. You can go on to the article. Like I say, you can find it at fratellowatches.com/watch-research-topic-the-visual-impact-index/. And you can plug in whatever watch you want to those calculations and see whether it comes out with a rating that you agree with. Now, to bring that back around to the discussion we're having here, my argument, therefore, is one of relativity. And it is that a watch can be theoretically as thick as it wants to be, as long as the other proportions are accordingly, as long as the other proportions fall in line with that thickness. So I guess that's my standpoint. Obviously, I have a preference. I like watches to be no thicker than around 14 millimeters, I guess, but there are some exceptions depending on the style or the application of that watch. But yeah, I'm a man who puts relativity at the top of the importance tree when it comes to watch thickness. Alon, would you like to step in and take the next point?
I have so much to say and so many thoughts and so many things, so I need to try to do it chronologically. So I'll first start off by thanking David. Again, an excellent article. Thank you so much. I, on this time, don't really agree with you, so I'm looking forward to this chat. Rob, I had a very high esteem of you, put you in a high regard. I thought you were a smart dude. You're okay. I detected some intellect, but when you wrote the VII article, I was blown away. I'm like, whoa, this dude is a genius. So there, I said it on record. Thank you. I urge our listeners, it sounded a bit boring when Rob explained what it is, but really take your time, find the article, play around with that tool that it's in there. When it came out, he didn't tell me he wrote the article. I read it the day it got published, and I remember it vividly. I believe it was on a weekend that it came out. I messaged him, called him. I said, dude, you need to register VII.com. You need to run with this. It's really brilliant. And I don't say that often about Rob, mostly because I'm teasing him and for entertainment purposes, but it's George Daniels material. That's how high I have, an high esteem of that article. So compliments, Rob. Now, we did kid around about the too thick or not, if we're talking about my waist or not. But on watches, me, myself, subjectively, very quickly, by image, specs, and in real life, if a watch is too thick, it's just too thick. It's a no-go. I won't wear it. I won't buy it. I don't love it. I don't want it. So I'm very hardcore on that parameter of thickness. And then, well, Rob said it's all about relativity, right? And everything is about proportions. So for me, something can A, be either too thick if it's out of proportion, but sometimes just in an absolute value, a watch is too thick. It just doesn't work. It doesn't matter what diameter it is. Some exceptions to the rule. So let's take, for the sake of it, the newest, thickest watch out there, the Rolex Deep Sea Challenge. For those that don't know, Rolex made a successor to their Deep Sea. By coincidence, we traded one in today. And I looked at it with the James Cameron dial, so it's the gradient dial. Stunning dial, but that watch is too thick. It does have a purpose though, so I'll accept it. Is it beautiful? No. And that's the same thing why the Land Rover Defender is one of my all-time favorite cars. And I had one, want one, still want a new one, old one, vintage. They're all amazing because its form follows function. So for me, the exception to the rule is something can be too thick, even though it's too thick and it's ugly. Its ugliness makes it beautiful when it has a function. So when FFF, form follows function, that's the exception to the rule for me personally. Now, so the Deep Sea is another exception to the rule. Another one could be an Omega Plow Prof. I don't think that one is too thick because it's so odd in shape and big and chunky and asymmetrical case-wise that it works. But the Omega Seamasters with a chronograph caliber, so everything built on, let's say, the 9000 platform, 9300 by heart, if I'm correct, the calibers are too thick. And then when your analogy, David, at the end of the article, you say, you made a comparison between the Submariner and a Black Bay Pro. So a Black Bay Pro is too thick. They use the same caliber as in the Black Bay GMT, which is a bigger case diameter. They went smaller, but kept the same thickness. So that links back to the VII, right? So proportionally, it doesn't work for me. And they didn't really do it on purpose. They just wanted to make a sturdy caliber. And then they're like, oh, shoot, the trend is smaller, so we need to make smaller sizes. But they can't push the slimness of the caliber and therefore the case back down. Omega made an amazing chronograph caliber, the 9300 caliber, which it's a basically a bi-compacts, but it has three functions. So they put the minute totalizer of the chronograph on the same axis as the minute counter of the chronograph. So you have two hands on one sub-dial, which is amazing, but it creates such a big belly to the watch, and they put it as well in the Speedmaster, where the predecessor is obviously a hand-wound Le Mania. Or a 321 or an 861 or 1861, and they're slim. So suddenly it becomes out of proportion, right? And they push that case size to 44 and a quarter of a millimeter, so 44.25. But it still doesn't work. So the VII doesn't work there for me, in my humble opinion. So specifically what I don't agree with you in the article, David, is you nuance it. You don't take a hardcore stance, but I don't think that within the Rolex group, they said, oh, you're not allowed to make a slim caliber. Because they've proven my theory by suddenly launching a Black Bay 58, which is also 39. And that is a slim caliber. So they apparently are able to slim down the caliber. So I don't know. It's probably commercial, but we have to understand they created such a tractor caliber at Kenisi, and everything starts from there. So do you reverse engineer or do you start with a design, right? And that's maybe another interesting article that I'm very keen for you to write.
There's just so much there to unpack. So I guess let's start with, you know, the example of that you used of the titanium Rolex. You know, I like to reason in extremes because I think it does help make a point, but I'm certainly not going to disagree with you there that for my purposes of wearing it every day, it is too thick. Like, I don't think I'm a big enough person. It wouldn't fit with my clothes. But at the same time, for the depth it's supposed to go to, I mean, from an engineering point of view, it's not too thick. It's what it needs to be. I guess, you know, this is where you and I are going to disagree, Alon, is that, you know, I wrote the article with a watch like the Black Bay in mind. So let's put that next to this Rolex. I mean, to me, the Black Bay steel, I'm just using that one because it's the one I own. It's not that, I mean, okay, fine. On a bell curve of watch sizes, I guess it might be a little bit to the right, but it's not the Rolex. And so I think that's definitely something that people would want to try on first before they make a judgment call. The other thing I'll say too is that, you know, Rob's kind of exercise with the VII is super interesting because it shows the limits of what data analysis can do. In other words, a model is always just going to be a model and you're never going to capture everything. And what I'm getting at here is that if I'm referring back now to the Omega on my wrist, 20 millimeters to a lot of people is just a non-starter. But, you know, the reason I bought this watch is because when I buy watches, I would say that the main driver for me, you know, aesthetics are important, but that's subjective. But I'm an engineer. I love specs. And so Omega, to me, with this watch has everything. And there is a cost, which you touched on, Alon. There's definitely a cost with tech specs and thickness. The last thing I'll say is that, you know, we talk about a wearability index, and this is where I'm going to cringe as I say this, but, you know, I asked my wife specifically, this Omega watch, do you find it too thick? She said, no, I do not. I said, does it look too big to you? She goes, no, I do not. So, you know, to me, that is the wearability index that counts, is like my harshest critic, my wife. And so ultimately it comes down to—
Bless her. She's a dream wife.
Right. There you go. So ultimately, I think it just comes down to, like, you know, wear what you like. And I think as long as the people around you that you trust say, yeah, you're good to go, I think that counts for a lot as well.
I am also curious as to whether you are able to program your wife to give you the answer you want, because she gave exactly the same answer twice to two slightly different questions. I find that slightly suspicious.
See, I told everyone this is how we were going to go down this path.
Okay. Yep. All right. Okay. Whatever. Okay. Two things to say. One, like, you're absolutely right about the limits of data analysis when it comes to the visual impact index. A lot of people obviously came back to me with feedback. I think of all the articles, of thousands of articles I've written, literally that one was the one that got the most feedback, and people emailing me with things that I did put into the index. I tweaked it slightly after some feedback, made it a little bit more refined, a little bit more consistent. But a lot of people misunderstood it to be a wearability index. And I always had a plan of making a wearability index. And there was one other, Alon, I don't know if you remember, but there was a trio of indexes that I wanted to make that could all be combined to result in one, like, final figure. But then that final figure, as accurate as it could have been based on those indexes, would have also been subject to taste. You know, a watch could be perfect according to the golden ratio or according to a set of parameters that you lay out for it academically that are consistent within themselves, but it might not be something that you like. Otherwise, there'd only be one brand. There'd only be one watch. One interesting thing that came to me while David was talking is that while I agree that a watch needs to be as thick as it needs to be for the purpose for which it was designed, there is only so thick watches need to be for any feasible purpose, at least on planet Earth. Okay, now when I was thinking about the Tudor Black Bay, I thought that watch is too thick for its water resistance, because we know there are plenty of much thinner watches water resistant to 200 meters. Okay, so that's not a good enough excuse. Is that watch actually water resistant to more than 200 meters because of its thickness, and actually water resistant to greater depths than other watches that are as slim as they can possibly be to be water resistant to 200 meters? Quite possibly. It is quite possible that that watch is so over-engineered that it wouldn't blow up or crumple under the pressure, more likely at 400 meters. Of course, Tudor's not saying that to anybody. It's not part of their marketing material. But let's assume that there is some actual benefit, even if it isn't represented by the text on the dial. So the deepest point that we know of, I guess, on planet Earth is the Mariana Trench, right? I think that's right. I think it's in there somewhere, the deepest point. Mm-hmm. And that means that any watch that can go to the very bottom of the ocean sets the bar for how thick a watch can be. There is no need for a watch to be any thicker than the thinnest it can be at that depth. Do you know what I'm saying? So, David, to your point that a watch can be as thick as you want it to be, I say, well, it can only be as thick as it can possibly have to be to perform any feasible function on this planet, at least. And that maybe is something you and Alon can agree on, because Alon says there is absolute thickness, and I'm inclined to agree with Alon in that regard.
What's funny about this is, like, I'll save this article for another time, but I love date windows on watches. And, you know, I've always thought, like, okay, what would Moser do if they were trying to, like, troll the watch community with a date watch? And I'm thinking we're going to get the Moser, you know, soda can this year or something like that, like just the thickest watch possible, just to trigger everyone. But yeah, you know, I think I see where you're going with this, Rob. You know, look, I think I'm very tolerant of thick watches because I just like stuff that's overbuilt. I mean, the point you made about, you know, the Tudor maybe going beyond what it's rated for. Yeah, maybe so. I don't know that for sure. But if it did, I'd say, cool, it's fantastic. Like, I'm glad they chose to go that direction then, because I like stuff that's overbuilt. But at the same time, I don't want anyone to get the impression that that I have a tolerance for anything. I mean, that's just not true. I think as much as I like to be a little bit outside the bounds of what is generally accepted, I still have my limits as well. Like I said, you know, the Rolex, that's just not really for me. But at the same time, you know, going back to what you said about the VII being subjective, ultimately, you're absolutely right. I mean, what I liked about that VII was that it was trying to mitigate the effects of just one particular measurement, right? But ultimately, then you kind of run into the problem of, okay, let's say the VII becomes the industry standard. Then at what point, what's the range of quote unquote accepted VII values, right? And then what happens when the press releases say the VII value and people start dismissing that offhand, if you see where I'm going? So you can really run this down into a very, very long rabbit hole. And so to me, what it comes down ultimately to is that it's like you said, it's subjective. I think you have to be willing to, and I know it's not always possible because ADs, you know, may or may not carry watches, you know, and you may have to travel to go see one. But at the same time, to the extent that one can, I think it's much better to say, okay, I'm not inclined to like this, but wouldn't it be kind of fun if I surprised myself and, you know, and went beyond just that one measurement by trying it on? So ultimately, the more we can experience and base on experience and not just data, I think the better off we are. Alon, I think you want to reply to that.
Actually, I don't want to reply to that right now, David, but I want to reply to what you said just before Rob even started, is about the missus. Does she actually love every wristwatch you own?
Ooh, that's a good, I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to basically calibrate her answer. You know, what I would tell you, this is probably a story for another time, but she's very tolerant of my wristwatch hobby. But she also is going to give me her opinion. So I think one thing that, this is a different topic, but like, I'm also very much into like men's fragrances, and there's some that she likes and some that she doesn't. And she's extremely clear about those. So I think what the watches tells me is that I have a preference that deviates from what the watch community may like, which, as we know, can tend to be very rigid and codified. But if you step out of that bubble and consider, like, okay, what does the actual public think? I'm still well within the bounds of being reasonable. Like, a soda can on my wrist might raise some eyebrows, but a 20 millimeter Omega, I don't think anyone's going to bat an eyelid.
Rob, don't you think that was a rather academic and politically correct answer? I just want to hear yes or no. So, David. Sorry, Rob, but yes or no? Was politically correct, huh? PC.
Yeah, well, I'm very much a fan of his professionalism, but I know you want to drag us through the mud of subjectivity, so yeah, come on, let's create
controversy. This is an analysis. What correctness are we doing here? David, I want to know, is there anyone she doesn't love and you still own it?
Gosh, you know, what watch does she... It's such a tough question because, like...
She hates them all.
Yeah, well, no, but this is okay. Again, going back to my wife being a keeper, like she's more inclined to say, yeah, go ahead and buy it. Like you don't need the money. Just get the watch. Do what makes you happy. So I think that
That's nice. Okay, but okay,
I swear to God, he's got a robot wife in the cellar. That's what he's referencing here, not the real one. David, stop buying watches.
I tell you what, I will say this though. Like if you said to me like, okay, maybe let's approach it another way. You know, she has basically on long-term loan, let's call it, but a Rolex 36 millimeter Datejust of mine, right? And I think that's like the limits of wearability for her. If there were one watch that she absolutely could not get away with, it is another Omega chronograph I have. It's the Planet Ocean 600 meter. And I think that's 24 millimeter stick, somewhere around that. So it would just look ridiculous on her. So I think if I had to kind of pick one way to answer your question, Alan, it'd be that one. And it would be that particular, it'd be another dive chronograph in this case.
David,
good watch though.
I know you guys are still in the honeymoon period of your marriage, but you know that everything that's hers is hers, and everything that's yours is hers. That's right. What the hell are you talking about? Long-term loan.
Well, I was trying to be diplomatic there, but yeah, let's be honest. It's hers.
No, okay, but yeah. You know why I'm pushing on this. So What's very interesting, so with my wife, she's also amazing, and she doesn't say a thing about my ludicrous watch collecting habits. Besides that, I'm professionally always engaged with watches, and sometimes I test watches if they need to be revised or whatever, or a pre-owned watch comes in or brands gives me one to test. So she often doesn't even know what the heck I've done when I come home with something else on my wrist. So now it's almost, it became a game, right? I don't say anything, and then just according to her body language, her eyebrows, I know if I should engage or not engage. But we like, the funny thing is she loves half of my collection, and I find the coolest responses and discussions when she utterly hates a watch, and she's like, ugly. Or so it's interesting that you raised that in context of too thick or not. So that's why I kept on going about this topic.
It is interesting. And just to step in with my side of relationship analysis, my girlfriend and I share watches quite a lot. She has a slightly smaller wrist than me, but not so much so that it can't normally be adjusted just on the clasp, you know, so you can just pop the spring bar a few notches down. She can wear like my Speedmasters for the day or whatever. And she loves most of the watches. She loves the Lavengers, the Glacier Tourbillon, the Chapec. She frequently finds herself pouring in my box. But there is definitely something, there's some watches in my collection that she cannot stand. And mostly it's anything from Casio. She hates all my Mudmasters. She doesn't mind the square G-Shocks, but she hates my new fluorescent yellow activity tracker thing that I wear while I'm running now, which you can see on my Instagram at RobNuds, RobNudds, because I love the color. She hates these bright colors. So funnily enough, I guess it is really, and maybe just because of the nature of what Casios are designed for, but it is the thicker watches she hates, and she's a Nomos girl at heart. So yeah, maybe there is something there that if you want to have a unisex collection you can share with your girlfriend or anyone, then yeah, maybe you should stick to the slimmer watches.
But you know, I think it's interesting that we're referring to outside parties here, because whenever I see someone make a comment like this watch is too thick, it's like, I think to me what they're saying is it's too thick for me, but it's too thick for me because I don't want to look silly wearing it. And you know, going back to my partner, I think if there was one type of watch that she would find silly, you know, we all joke about Hublot on the show because we love Hublot, but we do joke about them. If I brought home like a diamond encrusted Hublot Big Bang, I think she would look at me sort of funny, right? But the thickness, I don't think would have anything to do with it as much as just the general, you know, outlandishness of the watch. But I think what we're all saying is interesting here, because I think there's watches that we may love that others may not, and vice versa. But ultimately, like, everyone should just be cool enough with themselves to just kind of wear what you like, basically. So too thick to you may be just fine to everyone else out there in the real world.
And it is worth pointing out, of course, that these watches are being produced for someone and being bought by someone. You know, that it's not a coincidence that watches of 2 centimeter thickness and more are still being made. You know, if somebody put out a 24 millimeter thick watch and it didn't sell a single piece, you'd pretty quickly see those watches disappear from the market. But even now, in this era of smaller diameter acceptance, which I think we finally really start to enjoy and talk about openly, as if it used to be something to be ashamed of in the Breitling chronometer era, but it's worth noting that those massive Planet Ocean watches, and they're good watches as well, and they are like designed for purpose, maybe a little bit crazily over-engineered, but to be quite frank, any tool watch is over-engineered. Anything designed for that kind of environment has to be, because you don't design a product to work to the limit you stick on the dial. It's like saying, oh, well, this space rocket, it can survive in most conditions, but if the temperature's off by 1 or 2 degrees either way, it's going to blow up and that's going to be pretty embarrassing. Like, no, of course, everything that goes into space or goes deep underwater or goes through miles of mud needs to be able to survive 10 times more miles of mud, or twice as much depth at an ocean, or twice as much heat as you bust through the atmosphere. So yeah, maybe that's why things are big, because it's just to make sure that their crazy claims cannot be unfounded by them being close to the fringe of being able to handle what they say they can handle.
So actually, I just want to pick up on that really good point, Rob, and send it over to Alon, because you work on the retail side directly. Do you notice any trends at all with the customers that come into your store? I mean, granted, there's going to be a mix of hardcore collectors and just casual collectors, people just maybe wanting one good watch. Do you have any kind of trends off the top of your head that you can share with the audience?
We're definitely going to smaller diameters, and definitely thinner. So it's I was always provoking as well. That's hardcore, objective, thick or not too thick. It's obviously subjective, to be modest and realistic. But trends-wise, if we look at median, not the average, but median, the most occurring preference right now, we saw a trend. Let's go quickly. 70s, a male size was 38. If we're talking about diameter, yeah, and thickness, everything below 10 millimeters. Then with the launch of, let's say, the Chronomat, was 39 with a Valjoux 7750, rather thick caliber, therefore thick watch, had a big underbelly. That really created like a new trend in watchmaking. So 39 was then considered big. And then slowly, we grew. 2003, IWC came out with the Big Pilot, 46 millimeters. And I believe that thickness is more than 14 millimeters, if I'm not wrong. That was considered humongous. Then we had the trend of U-Boat, TW Steel on the lower end, Invictus in the U.S., if a brand is being bashed, Hublot, I think that Invicta is square too, right? David, you lived in the U.S. So, and then you had Jacob & Co. with the 5 time zones. I believe that was 50 or something. And then we slowly start creeping back. Then 42 was a sweet spot for a median and average size for men. And now we really see, and I guess if we want to talk about Tudor again, they really, really touch upon the sweet spot of 39. So 39 now for time only, so non-chronographs, is definitely now the sweet spot. And everything above that is considered a bit big. And for chronographs, it needs to be below 42.
So we're thinking that the modal average, the one that appears most often, is the 39.
Yes.
But the mean of it would still be much higher than that, right? Because watches, although they go down to 36, 34, 31 in some crazy cases for men, that's rarer than them going above, right? Because I still hear a lot of 42 millimeter guys, like guys just stuck on 42 millimeters diameters. It's like that is the smallest they will go. And they're still 44s, 47s, and even bigger, right?
Correct. But those gents, most probably 5 to 7 years ago, their to-go size would have been 43, 44, 45. You see that in Breitling. Breitling is going down. Tudor is going down.
Yeah.
And then what I sell really in quantities is a lot of Nomoses, 36. On Tudor, we talk about Black Bay with bezels or without. It's a bit confusing, right? Because Black Bay is such a humongous collection. They have a chrono in there. They have dive watches in there. And they have the Explorer 1 lookalikes, I call them.
That's my favorite. The BB36 is amazing.
Exactly. So the 36 is sweet. So taking it to the big brother Rolex, which OP, Oyster Perpetual, is the best? The 36 is the best for men and ladies. So you see suddenly that with all the new launches, and I'll guess we'll see a lot of before, during, and after fairs now, April, March, April, in the summer we'll have Geneva Watch Days. I promise you, we'll see still smaller. A few weeks ago, Moser, their big news before the fair, smaller endeavors, right? So they went smaller. So what they do, brands, is a lot of line extensions, and it's all, they gravitate to smaller, thinner. Chronographs become slimmer. Everything needs to be thin.
I must say I've seen a return to micro rotors recently. In recent times, brands seem to be favoring those. And of course, one of our favorite watches of recent years. And the watch on my wrist today, David, just to satisfy your wrist check fascination, is the Chapec Antarctique, of course. And I'm wearing it because we're recording this on St. Patrick's Day. So just 2 days before this goes live on the Real Time show. And I'm wearing it because it's green, white, and orange. And that was a little bit of a nod to my Irish birth. Okay, as a closing remark, I would say for me, it's all about relativity, but a watch cannot be thicker than the greatest purpose for which it could possibly be intended on planet Earth. And that is my absolute top bracket. And I think that's probably a little slimmer than even some of the watches we've seen out there on the market today. But I'm sure the Mariana Trench would like to prove me wrong. Alon, could you give us your closing thoughts in a nutshell? And then David, you wrap it up for us and I'll do the outro.
My closing thought is this. You do you, our dear listeners. Have an amazing day and thank you for listening.
Nice.
Couldn't agree more. I agree. Wear whatever you want to wear, and hopefully the day we all meet up at the Red Bar meetup, or wherever it happens to be, we're all wearing something different and fun on our wrists,
and all wearing different colored mankinis, of course. So if you would like to take part in the Real Time show and be part of our network, then please do get in touch. You can contact me on Instagram at Rob Nudds, RobNudds. You can find David there at DAVAUCHER, and you can find Alon on Instagram at ALONBENJOSEPH. We will be back next week with a Q&A and another interview with one of watchmaking's finest. Until then, stay safe. Thank you for spending the time listening to us, and keep on ticking.